I want to talk a little bit about developing for the cloud. And from my perspective, developing for the cloud in a lot of ways is similar to developing for traditional applications as you are today. But there are some nuances to consider, and there are some very big changes, in my opinion, that need to be thought out. And it really comes down to, is it a net new application, or are you trying to port an existing application to run in the cloud? And that question unto itself will dictate a lot about how you're going to move that application to the cloud or how you're going to develop that application for the cloud. In its simplest form, the cloud is nothing more than another place to run your application. And there's a lot of press, a lot of hype around cloud. And you know, Ireland is one of those places where there is a lot of information about cloud because Microsoft has their data center here for a large part of Europe. There are other players in the market who have their data centers either currently residing in Ireland or about to be residing in Ireland. And this is becoming a centralized location for data center operations. Some of that is driven around our atmosphere and the fact that it never really gets hot and never really gets cold, so it's a great place to run hardware. Some of that is based on the availability of power. Some of that is based on economic situations. But nonetheless, Ireland is becoming a hub for cloud activity. So I want to give a quick overview of what the Azure platform is and how it fits into application development and what's required then as you go through. So at the bottom layer, I'm going to start bottom and work up, is on-premise line of business applications, composite applications. The cloud provides flexibility that I can connect and interact with on-premise solutions today and scale out so that I'm using some of the compute power and some of the storage options that are available to me in the cloud while still connecting back to and utilizing what may be large amounts of SQL data that's in my infrastructure. Might be that I'm using line of business applications and pulling data from Azure. There's a number of different scenarios that would be available to me with secure connections between on-prem and the cloud. You can develop a full end-to-end architecture in the cloud. So web front-end, application, and data all residing in the cloud. And because of the fact that it's just running Windows Server, either 2008 or 2008 R2, I'm using IIS. I'm able to utilize any of the platforms that are available. So I could develop that in .NET. I can develop that in Java, in Ruby. I can develop that in PHP. I can use pre-existing CMS-type solutions, or I can develop the code natively myself. And then across the platform, there's a number of pieces that allow me to do some of those end-tier functions. And we're going to walk through a few of those pieces here. Compute is compute, and it's available to you as a web role, which is what it sounds like, it's IIS. A worker role, which can be used for application deployment, which can be used for third party, so where you're going to put your Tomcat, where you're going to put your MySQL. Or it's available as a VM role. And the big differential at the VM role is that I am then taking ownership of the OS. I now am going to patch it, I'm going to own its operation, and I'm removing some of that abstraction that going to cloud provides me. But in the same way, the VM role does provide me some flexibility in terms of that migration of existing applications to the cloud as opposed to net new development. To get high availability, to have a rich, highly available application, I need to have at a minimum two instances of that application running. That then means that I've got two instances running in one data center and I've got a third instance shadow running in another data center, so that in the event that a data center itself loses connectivity or loses operations, we live in a strange world. There's no reason to think that something couldn't take out a data center for whatever reason. As resilient as a data center is in its operation, there's powers outside our control that might impact that. Having it running in a second data center means that if Dublin goes down, it's going to pull up in another data center immediately. It'll be non-noticeable to the end user, and our infrastructure is supporting that the data and the application will be replicated and highly available across that process. And there's a load balancer sitting at the front end of that. So we remove all of the complexity of scaling an environment and allow you to worry about the application, which is really, as developers, what your main consideration is. And there's a couple of different forms of storage. And this, to me, is the consideration that most people need to make when they're starting to look at developing for the cloud, is how am I going to deal with data? And there's two differing types, and I'm going to go through them in a little bit greater detail, because to me this is the biggest consideration, and as I talk to customers, you know, day in and day out, this is the one that I go back to as they start to work through that. You have Windows Azure Storage, which comes in a variety of formats, and I'm going to talk to those in a minute, and then you have SQL Azure, which is SQL running from a cloud infrastructure. But there's some serious differentials that you need to consider in that. If you've got large amounts of data, you have the opportunity to sell that data. So depending on the type of data that you have, it might be of interest to other people to pay and consume that data. So if you are the owner of a large amount of genealogical information, people around the world are tracing their heritage. Ireland has 80 million people around the world of Irish descent. They would be interested in being able to subscribe to and utilize a genealogical set of data to then find their parents, grandparents, and greater grandparents. So that information is then consumable and marketable. So we offer a marketplace to sell that information. This marketplace is available in certain geographies and will be growing out in terms of its availability to consume and its availability to sell. And if you want more information about that process, please feel free to come and talk to myself or talk to Josh, and we'll discuss what the options are for utilizing the data market and how your data might fit within that. There's a content delivery network, and the CDN is for providing rich media objects, downloadable or real-time media streaming. And we have a network around the globe to facilitate that. So a number of endpoints tracking back to our main data centers to provide that optimum experience from an end-user perspective for things like photo sharing, for things like audio and video streaming. So the CDN is a component of our Azure platform to facilitate that next generation rich media type experience. And the app fabric is that connectivity that allows for my credentials to be provided from an on-premise solution and to give me single sign-on to an application in the cloud, but also to facilitate a secure encrypted connection between my location and the data that I'm running or the application that I'm running in a cloud environment. It also provides things like caching and integration through two line of business solutions like BizTalk, so that I can utilize some of the workflow management that BizTalk provides, but at the same time, I'm able to then utilize that against a cloud service as well as an internal application. And from a development perspective, as I said, and I repeatedly keep going back to, we allow you to develop on .NET. We allow you to develop with PHP, with Java. And we allow you to use tool sets like Visual Studio with the richest set of tools for integration to Azure, but also Eclipse and editors, so that you have at your avail the tools that you need, depending on the application you're developing, to deploy and to run that application in a cloud environment. So why would I go to the cloud? Well, really, it's about a couple of different scenarios, four to be exact, that have been outlined as reasons why I would start to look at my application in the cloud. First one is on and off. And we have a great example of that here in Dublin in Airgrid, who have an application that runs for part of the year, the winter, and then they shut it off for the rest of the year so that it minimizes the operation costs, and they only power it on when they need it. Because this is a pure utility model in terms of billing, you're only paying for what you use. So during the off-peak seasons, you can have that instances turned off so that you don't have to pay for additional costs. The other one is that fast growing, where I'm scaling, and I mean scaling, at a very fast rate. And this gives me the flexibility to scale up as demand goes. And where we see that is, who knows what that next application is? Everyone's trying to build the next Facebook, the next Twitter, the next whatever, so that they gain, you know, go from 0 to 600 million users in the course of a number of years, hopefully number of months. And having the flexibility to scale out an infrastructure and rely on somebody else's infrastructure to pay as you grow provides a lot of flexibility for that fast-growing type of application. The other two are really around bursting. And bursting can be in two different forms, predictable and unpredictable. Predictable is I'm doing batch processing. So I do a batch process every night at a bank. Heavy processing, heavy computation. I'm doing batch processing as part of a research project for, I don't know, cancer research or for geographical information. I'm pulling in a large amounts of data and I'm computating that. Traditionally, we would have gone to HPC, high performance computing, to do that. But I can use the cloud to do all that HPC components, but still have my data reside either locally or in the cloud. And then I'm just using that for very predictable bursts. I know exactly when all of that data is going to be computated. Either it's running into a batch process in the evening, or I know when I'm going to be doing heavy computation. And I can scale up and scale down to meet that need. Again, paying per use so that it's really only while I'm bursting that I'm going to be consuming a lot of computation or data. Unpredictable bursting is where I throw out a blog post and suddenly it goes viral and everyone under the sun has retweeted it, and suddenly my site goes from 1,000 views to 15,000 views to 25,000 views over the course of a couple of hours. We can provide the scalability that will allow the system to take that up and bring it back down based on that unpredictable burst. The other scenario that I see very, very prevalent in this is around media. So utilizing that CDN network, utilizing some of that graphic front-end components that are available through all of the different CMS type solutions that are out there to present online campaigns. So if you're doing, you know, advertising, online advertising, campaign type stuff for major market customers like a Coke or a auto company, this is a great way of having the flexibility that over the course of the day, you might see 1,000 hits, and then suddenly it runs on television, and suddenly you see 40,000 hits, and then it dies back down after the commercial and the 15 minutes after that. This gives you the flexibility of bursting up and down based on that kind of demand. And I see that as really being a real consideration of one of the areas where cloud has a lot of opportunity. So there's really two reasons that I would go to the cloud. Cost or strategy. Cost is a very big one because I can develop to the cloud for less money because I don't pay for an infrastructure to support it, dev, UAT, and then production. But also, when I start to operate, I'm minimizing that investment over the start. If I'm a startup or I'm looking to deliver out a new service, until I actually start to see a ramp up and I'm starting to receive revenue off of it, this gives me a lot of flexibility in that. The other one is strategic. And the strategic one is around things like, if I'm doing HPC computing or I'm doing batch processing, if I can cut that batch process down by suddenly having 100 or 500 VMs simultaneously computing that, and I can take a 4-hour batch process down to 5 minutes, that now gives me 3 hours and 55 minutes of open time on my network to do other work. So that really then becomes a strategic move in terms of what other things can I achieve with that open window now in the organization. Same from an HPC perspective. How quickly can I computate out that information that I've pulled in to then be able to utilize that research data? So that's a strategic move. And I believe you need to architect solutions to minimize the operation costs and to maximize the impact. And this is where cloud architecture needs to be rethought in terms of what traditional architecture is. And for me, that's at the data layer. Now, I talked about at the start that I really see in a true end tier, my presentation layer is nothing but presentation. And I really am relying heavily on the business logic and the data access layers, then how I break all these pieces apart, that graphics piece, the UI piece at the front, I can worry about, in, as Rob says, using the UX fairies. It gives me a lot of flexibility in terms of how I would provide applications in the cloud. From a data storage perspective, I look at Windows Azure as being one of the key considerations when I'm starting to build a net new application. So inside that, there are a number of different types of storage available. There's blob storage, which is just binary storage. There's table storage, which is semi-structured or tabular data storage. And to me, this is the big one. Because most people, when they are developing, initially think relational database. I need to have a SQL. Well, SQL is much more expensive than table storage. SQL provides some very positive things that a table storage doesn't provide in terms of that relational data structure and migration from existing applications. And depending on how your search criteria is, relational might be a better way to go. But for a lot of search, tabular is faster and cheaper. So if you've got huge amounts of data, you want to be thinking tabular. You're going to think about how you're going to key that, and you're going to think about how you structure that, because you're going to rewrite every row. It's like a big, flat Excel. But the cost differential is significant, and the operational differential is significant if you're heavily search-dependent. The biggest search entities in the world are all driven off of this type of structure, because it's fast and it's cheap. We developed relational databases when we moved out of mainframes to minimize cost. Instead of writing data a bunch of different times, we wrote it once, and we built relations. But we're kind of returning back to a mainframe-type scenario when you're building cloud applications. So in a lot of ways, that table structure can change to become more of a table-based as opposed to a relational-based. And as I talk to customers and partners, that is the starting point to my conversation, is usually, what is your data? What is your requirements from your data? What are you doing to it? What do you want to present with it? And when you understand that, you then can determine how big a database you have, how much data is in there, what that data is consumed of, and what parts of that data are important to you. And once you understand that, you can determine, relationship database is better for you, or is it tabular data? The other piece that it provides is Azure Queues. So queues provide a guaranteed delivery, but it's a two-step consumption to ensure that the information that I'm throwing into the queue gets consumed across one of those roles. And why we do it the way we do it is because a VM can move. Based on the way the Azure infrastructure is, a VM doesn't exist on a single server at any given time. It doesn't lock into that server and stay there. It moves. It can move across any rack or across any of the pods, which have thousands of computers in them, across the data center. So you don't know where your VM is running at any given time because it's being load balanced underneath at an infrastructure level to ensure optimum performance. So that just means we're popping up new instances of your VM because they're stateless, and the queue will then just start shooting into whichever those VMs is accessing at any given time. And we'll go through the, it doesn't guarantee an only once delivery, because if it times out, there's a timeout mechanism, and I'll show that here in the next slide, it's going to reallocate that down, because it doesn't delete it from the queue until it's got completion. And I'll show that in a second. And the other thing is that in best effort, it's going to do first in, first out. And I'll kind of show how that works here. So the queue model is simple. You've got a whole bunch of worker roles web roles, sending messages. And those messages go in the queue. And then you got worker roles at the back end that are consuming those. And as it consumes it, it takes the message and starts to work on it. But it doesn't delete it from the queue. It makes it gray. When it has completed it, it's going to return a message back to say, remove it from the queue. And the reason it does that is that that worker role could suddenly go off. And if it does, one of the other worker roles is going to pick it back up after a timeout, so it ensures that that message gets completed and then removed from the queue. So it's slightly different than traditional queue mechanisms if you're using MQ or MSMQ, but it has a logic behind why it's doing what it's doing, and it's doing this for a cloud infrastructure. So as you're building out your queue, and as you're building out your processes around queues, you need to understand some of the differentials between queue management for cloud and queue management for traditional line of business applications. And the other piece of that is the data storage. And I know I touched on this earlier. So Windows Azure data is semi-structured. A table contains entities. And we'll talk about what an entity is. And then we'll talk about partitions. And they can be partitioned across thousands of servers. So this gives you the flexibility of scale. If you have tremendous amounts of data, and you have tremendous amounts of requests for that data, this gives you the flexibility to scale out and up to meet that requirement, but at the same time, efficiency to deliver that back in a very quick and agile way. And all of those queries are done either... all of that can be delivered either through straight.net or through RESTful interface. And I would always recommend RESTful interface. That's just my preference, but that's not to say that there isn't ways to do it with other. As you break it apart, what the data storage tables is, a table is a big set of entities. An entity is basically a row. Inside every row, you have a property, which is the columns. Think of Excel. You then have a row key and a timestamp when it was created. You now have a partition and a partition key, which then defines out a sort order. So if we look at that, this is a blog post. So you can see that I have a series of author, link, changed on, title. Simple set of data. And I am utilizing author as a partition. So all of the author's data is being put into a single partition, easily searchable. And then if I go search for an author's posts, as one of the basic search criteria that I would use on a blog, this will pull back all of the author's posts. I could have utilized any number of reasons why I would use author versus topic or whatever the tag is. Or you can set that based on a number of different criteria. You're going to base that on what's the search criteria that's going to be used most frequently, because that's the one you want to optimize results for. And then if you could search by date, it's going to be a slightly slower response because it's going to transverse all of the different partitions looking for that data. So understanding how you set up your data is going to drive understanding how you're going to consume that data is going to determine how you're going to set up that table structure and your partitioning. Okay? To me, this is a very a radical shift. You know, and when you go out to talk to a lot of people, the initial emphasis is always on doing everything on SQL. And depending on the size and scale of the data, I then say, have you thought about table structure? One, from a cost perspective. Two, from a performance perspective. But SQL Azure is SQL. And there are reasons why I would use SQL in the cloud, the same as there's reasons why I would use SQL on-premise today. And some of that is, you know, continuity, but some of that is relational data structures provide an inherent speed based on the type of search criteria that I'm doing. So I don't want to say that table structure is the only way to go, but it is something that you need to consider, and it's not a consideration that most people make today when building on-premise applications. So just stepping back and looking at both and determining which one has value is a big consideration when developing for cloud. So security. This is probably the consideration that's made most about developing for cloud, is how is it going to be secured? How secure is my data? How secure is my application? And what considerations do I need to make in developing for that? So first and foremost, you're developing a web application. So regardless of you're building it as a line of business application, it's got a web component of it because you're going out across the public internet. So you need to think about this application from a security perspective in that manner. So endpoints, HTTP, HTTPS. How am I using my credentials? Am I using a Active Directory Federated Services where I'm using ADFS to do credential checks for the line of business applications? Am I using a third-party ACL for things like Facebook, Twitter, Gmail, Live as an option for my security to recognize who a user is? Or am I doing forms-based authentication? What kind of application is it? Who am I delivering it to? How are they connecting to it? What type of devices? As we go back to the conversation about devices and services, that's really a key understanding for, as I'm building applications for the cloud, who's my end user? How are they going to consume this? And from what devices are they consuming it? I will then look at security based on how I need them to access my information. You still need to rely on traditional defenses. So as you build your code, you're going to want to ensure at every layer that you are using security between each of the layers and differing security. So the keys that you're using need to change between each of the layers. You need to think about how you're doing your data access, how you're doing your business logic, how you're doing your presentation. And you still are using design patterns for ASP.NET applications. So securing a cloud application, you're removing some of the So you're going to remove some of the components that you would look at today when building an application. You're going to remove things like at the host level. I'm not going to worry about patches and updates unless I'm using a VM role. I can control that by saying I'm not going to allow Microsoft to apply patches to that Windows VM until I've fed it against it, or not at all because I've developed to a specific SDK and I'm staying there. You're also not going to worry about files and directories as much because it's a stateless VM, meaning that you don't have a C drive of information that you're going to store, which also means you don't have a registry. So if you're building an application, you now have to rethink how you're delivering some of those pieces. So log files, for example. If you want to generate logs, you can utilize an NTFS drive attached to it. You can start to look at table storage or even SQL Azure. But you're going to rethink how you do some of the things that you're doing today from an application perspective. You're not going to secure the network because you don't have control over the firewall, the switch, or the router. There is a defined set of guidelines in terms of what protocols you can use to connect, and you're going to be utilizing very specific means of accessing that edge perimeter. Now, again, because you can put an ADFS in place or you can use any of the other credential mechanisms, you're going to look at other mechanisms for securing that edge. So you're not publishing through a firewall and opening a port up, as an example. But you are going to secure at the application level. And to me, this is the important part, is that at an application level, the developer still is in control. So how you do credentials across the application, how you access the data layer, and from the other pieces, I think that agile development and unit testing is also a key component of how you would develop for the cloud, because this is a much more agile delivery mechanism than a traditional client-server environment. It's going to be evolving. A lot of changes come. From a platform perspective, we will release an update of new features and functions across the Azure platform, probably once a quarter. So as a platform, you're changing fairly regularly and fairly rapidly. It doesn't mean that your application will become unable to work with each new release. It just means more features and functions will become available to you. Some of those features and functions may or may not implicate your application. As a result, your application will become more fluid in terms of its development. I also think that you need to be thinking about all of the same things that you're thinking about today when you're building an application. Cryptography, parameter manipulation, the data sensitivity. Data sensitivity to me is a big one. Understanding what the data is, what risk is with that data, and how you're securing that data, how openly you're making that data. You need to be thinking about those types of scenarios. And I presented this session to a group of partners in Munich earlier this year, and we got into a very large discussion around, well, how would I secure this? How do I, do I do traditional penetration tests? Yes. Look at it the same as you would any other cloud application. Do I need to tell Microsoft I'm doing it? No. In fact, it's probably better if you don't. You want to be able to test to make sure that you're application is as secure as possible. You're going to do some ethical hacking against that application. Whether it's residing on a cloud or it's residing in a private data center or it's residing inside your firewall, you're still going to do the same kinds of things. You need to think of this application the same as you do your traditional application. How you secure it, how you attack it. But at the same time, you need to be rethinking some of those mechanisms because you're now delivering it to a public cloud. In some cases, it might be multi-tenancy. So I've now got to think about how I'm going to deliver security across multiple types of users, across multiple businesses, all accessing the same data structure without breaking that data apart. So you're going to rethink some of those components. I'm conscious of time, and I'm conscious that Rob is got a full hour of data ahead of him on Mango. So I'm going to try and chop this one down because this is one of the topics that Microsoft will repeatedly deliver around cloud. It is a big component of our future vision. So we've delivered this message to the developer community and the ISV community earlier this year. We'll be doing it again. And I'm happy to come out and talk to any organization one-on-one around developing a cloud application or developing applications for the cloud. So as a takeaway from this, if you're interested in cloud, you're interested in what the next steps are with cloud, or you are investigating it or have even started development on it, we would be happy to have a conversation with you regardless if you're a one-man shop or if you are a very large development organization reaching the biggest players in the Irish market. I'm as happy to talk to any one of you about delivering cloud technologies today and around some of the development processes. Rob talked about ALM and TFS, how that fits into cloud delivery, how you do security, and from an architecture perspective, what is the application and how are you delivering that and what considerations should you be making. My email address is Wilbur, WILBOURC@Microsoft.com, and I don't answer the phone very often because I'm always doing these types of things, but I do answer my email. So if you would like to have that conversation, please feel free to send me an email or grab me at one of the breaks and I'll give you one of my cards and you can we can make an agreement to connect and discuss this a little bit more. Now before I step off, I want to just give the opportunity if there's any questions. If I'll answer them now and then we'll get Rob and start talking about Mango. And the girls will get a mic. Fantastic.
With respect to the tabular data you were talking about earlier,
yeah,
you said that transactions are really at an entity level. What happens with the multi-node nature of the cloud? How are you dealing with situations where you want to run long-running transactions over multiple entities? Is there patterns on that or resources?
Yeah. That's not an easy an answer that's going to come in a couple of seconds here, but I can provide you with some very good detailed information around how to handle that, so the long-running data, as well as how scaling that across. So there's instances where you're going to have that geo-dispersed. So you're going to have endpoints in multiple geographies, and that data is being backed up at the back end through our infrastructure. So I can provide a very detailed response to that, but at a simple level, the guts of the underneath of this is to provide that exact functionality. So when building out a cloud infrastructure, we're looking at how we're able to deliver a service not to one geography but globally with data replication across all of those endpoints to ensure that there's data integrity as well as data availability.
Yeah, I can understand that at a platform level, but in terms of your application, if you're going to have multiple components within your application trying to compete for the same resources within the tabular data, there has to be some kind of mechanism for synchronization or transaction control.
Yes, absolutely. And again, that depends if you're doing it on a consumption basis or on a write basis, and as to how you would manipulate that. Some of that is going to be around queue mechanisms. Some of that is going to be around the consumption mechanisms as to how you put the service together. So, but I can, provide some greater detail on that if you want. Fantastic. Anybody else with a question? Oh, Jesus, you're scaring me already. You got your hand up. Oh, no. Okay, I'm going to do this one, and then I'm going to get Rob to talk Mango. So, go ahead.
You mentioned about a marketplace of data. What can you tell us about standardization of the data in the cloud? And so how can Windows Azure support a semantic web?
So that's a good question. So I think that how you publish the data that you've got, so whether you're publishing it through a marketplace or whether you're just establishing a RESTful service and making that data available, whether it's an open data availability like I see at Fingal right now, or it's you're doing it in a B2B fashion. How you present that data back out to allow for as many different end users or end points to consume that data, because it's your data, because you're building it in a specific way, how that data is going to be consumed from a semantic perspective, to provide that global view, it's at the developer's level in terms of that, in terms of making that those decisions. As a platform, we provide the availability to robustly distribute that data and to scale so that the consumption can be as global as possible. But in terms of the structure, It's at the developer's level to start to control how they want to structure that data and how they want to present that data out to users to consume through the services that are being provided. It's not an easy question to answer, really, because it's reliant on a lot of other people's, how you develop and how you send those services out is at each developer's control, and hopefully that they're taking on the decision to publicly make that data available. Now, it depends on the data that they're making, it depends on the application, and it depends on its consumption level as to whether or not it's even viable. Once you hit the data market, there's some choices that can be made in terms of how you're going to distribute that data, and then also how you're going to monetize that data so that you can subscribe to the data. You can, you're setting out some differing structures there in terms of who would consume that data. So it's not really as simple as a single data structure will facilitate that. In developing, I'm going to look at what type of data I'm presenting, who my audience is, and whether or not I'm going to be looking for that, you know, B2B type scenario where it's a very closed exchange of data, or if it's in a far more granular level where I'm giving that data out to any consumption, any service that could possibly consume it, and aggregating that data into whatever format. And those are, the plays that I see. More of that is owned. So if I take Fingal for an example, you know, they're very good about publishing their data structure with the open data model. And then it becomes consumable by multiple people for multiple utilizations. But it, the ownership of that really is on the data owner as opposed to the platform provider. We're a facilitator in that process. So I got one last question, and then Rob will do the mango.
Just as someone who's a graduate and is interested in getting involved in this, what's the best way to start learning about it? Is there an emulator, or is there a free trial?
Yeah,
or so how would you best go about that?
That's a great question. So we have a number of different programs that are available. So if you're a startup organization, we have BizSpark, which will get you MSDN benefits, which will get you software to develop with, that will also get you Azure benefits. If you're a student, we have the WebSpark program, which equally provides you with access and availability of of services to utilize this. From a commercial perspective, there's two ways. You can utilize your MSDN subscription, which will provide you with a set amount of hours of compute and data storage available per month for your own testing and utilization. And then beyond that, then it's a pay-per-use model where you're being charged in cents US per hour of consumption, and then based on the data that you're using for the storage. We have tools, so WebMatrix provides the opportunity to deploy cloud applications. We have Visual Studio and various Visual Studio Express products that will allow you to develop, and they provide emulators for developing local and then pushing to the cloud. So, and there's great documentation supporting any and or all of that. So if you're looking at as entry point, utilizing something like WebMatrix to do an Embraco or other CMS-type solution, you can deploy that locally and then push that to an Azure instance and consume and utilize that. So there are a number of different tool sets that are available, a lot of them for free, a lot of programs that are available to startups and to students and to organizations to start dipping their toe into the cloud and understanding how to utilize it and how it would impact applications. So all of those services are available. And as a follow-up to this, we will ensure that everyone gets links to BizSpark and to WebSpark and to all of these programs so that, you know, if you're able to utilize them, that you take advantage of that and start looking at cloud and how it might be beneficial to you. So if there's more questions, I'll be around at the break.